So, I'm going to try and share a story that's going to uplift you all in this hall and go away thinking. Thinking about how you can help South Africa get back on and make it great, as Helen said. So my story starts on the 25th of November, 2019. The reason why I remember that day, because on the 26th was my wife's 60th birthday. I was having a lot of pain in my back, and like any sportsman, we're too stupid to realize there's something wrong. So we just carry on. And I carried on. Then I had an MRI. And in the MRI, they found I had a tumor pressing against my spine. And I got that call that some of you might have had in this room. That call that everybody wants to avoid. My friend called me and says, that tumor in your spine is cancerous, and I think you've got 6 months to live. Now, my wife cried a lot. I cried for about a minute, and then I stopped. The reason why I stopped, I thought about it, and I think, you know, I'm 56 years old, and what I've done in my lifetime, most people do in two or three lifetimes. Because that's what life's all about. It's about seizing the day, about doing everything you can at the best every single day. Don't put off what you can do today. My life started when I was a very young boy. I was twice the size of everybody else. So I won every race. Can you imagine? Any sport, I was twice the size. My brother, who's now the same height, was this high. And I was winning everything. And then one day I said to my father, comes out of Germany, so I said, listen, I want to get a racing bike. And my father, being German, he's quite tight. He says, no way. If you win the national Ironman, junior Ironman, I will buy you a bike. And you know what happened at the Natal Champs? At the Natal Champs, I had one of those guys, you know, those little short guys that got more passion, determination than you. He beat me. And I thought, what do you do now? You know what you do now? You start putting some effort. Make sacrifices. And I did that. And for all those parents out there, my father never, ever pushed me. He just provided transport to go swimming. He would say, listen, we're going to go at 5:45. And at 5:45, if you weren't in the car, he went by himself. Because remember, all of you in this room, it's up to you. Don't believe other people will help you. It's up to you. You got to do it. And you won't believe, after all that training, when I was 15 years old, I won the junior and senior Ironman. And because my sport's very Mickey Mouse, not soccer, cricket, or rugby, I was in the classifieds. Oscar Chulipsky wins junior and senior Ironman. Classifieds. But the worst thing happened 1 month later, sitting in my house in Westville, Natal, watching the news, and these guys all know what the news was like those days. We used to watch the test panel, one channel. Michael De Morgan came on the news, sports news, and he said, you won't believe this. In Australia, this guy, Grant Kenny, has just won the junior and senior Ironman. I said, what the hell is this? I hated this bloody Grant Kenny. He was on South African TV. I wasn't on it. And I had become the first person. He was the second person. And that drove my passion to race against this guy. But because of apartheid, there's no way I could do anything. In 1983, I was going to race against Grant Kenny in Hawaii. Went there, and there was no Grant Kenny. He wasn't invited to the race. And I still hated this guy. But this is what happens in April 1983. I hear about this race from Molokai, a leper colony, to Oahu, where Tom Selleck and all those guys hang around, you know, Waikiki. I heard about this race, and this guy, Grant Kenny, had won it 4 years in a row. And they said, he'll be back here in October. This is April. And like all of you in this room, you've got to make a decision in life. And you know, too many people make a decision in their life about finances. But I can tell you right now, the most important thing in life when you make decisions is about passion. Passion can get you much further than money. Money comes secondary. I was sitting on Waikiki Beach, white sands, blue ocean, girls with not too many clothes on, and it took me a minute to decide. I had to give up my rugby bursary, give up studying to be a CA, and I was going to take on Grant Kenny. Let's fast forward to 1983 October. 6 months later, I fly over in a little plane to the island of Molokai, the leper colony. And between these two islands, 52 kilometers, the most roughest channel in the world. And there I had a race against this guy, Grant Kenny. For the first time, I actually see him at the start of the race. He's a little bit shorter than me, 3 months younger. And he still didn't know I was. But luck and love, he'd won this race 4 times. And you've got to follow the people ahead of you. So I went off next to him, and I remember in this rough oceans, it's not like the Argus or the Comrades. There's no seconding tables along the way. Everybody's got an escort boat. Obviously, I had a rubber ducky, he had the QE2, you know, budgets, what do you expect? And off we go, and I follow him till I can see a wahoo in the distance. And in our sport, the only way you know you've won, because the waves are going up and down like this, you cannot see your opposition. The only way I knew I was winning the race or had won the race is there's no surf skis lying on the beach. And when I got there, there were no surf skis on the beach. In fact, after 2 beers, Grant Kenny came in. Grant Kenny came in, and you know what happens to people that come second? They got long lists of excuses. The poor guy said to everybody, I wasn't really training for this event. But you know, the funny thing is when you come second, you always have to have excuses. When you don't achieve, always excuses. And his excuse, he wasn't training. Nobody told him, he broke his own record by 12 minutes. But I'd beaten him by 15, poor guy. But you know, the joke is that after 7 attempts, he always came second. Can you imagine? He couldn't learn. So I won that race 7 years in a row. 7 years in a row, I beat the poor Australian. And then apartheid kicked in. They said, Oscar, you can't go and race the Molokai again. Peak of my athletic ability. They said, no, you can't. And what do you do in life when that happens? Do you cry? I mean, I think I got off the classifieds. I was in the back pages already. I was getting famous. I had about 2 people on TikTok. There wasn't any TikTok there, by the way. And again, you have to make decisions in life. And that's what you've all got to do here. Whether to go overseas, whether to stay. And I decided, you know, in my sport, it's so Mickey Mouse. When you win a race, you've got a case of beers. When you win a big one, you get a case of wine. I can tell you right now, you're not going to put any kids through private school on that kind of prize money. So I decided to take up this game called golf. Never played it before. And off I went. I said, I'm going to be a scratch by the end of the year, and I'll become a pro golfer, because my mate, Ernie Els, every time he swings a club, he makes money, millions, and I make nothing. I thought, let me take up this sport. But like anything in life, guys, it takes a lot of sacrifice. I used to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and train, and then go and work and go back and train. End of the year, cut a long story short, I was playing golf at Royal Cape with a famous guy, Graham Beck. Most people know him for his champagne, but he was the largest individual coal miner in the world. And he said, Oscar, next week, if you can break par at Clovelly Country Club, I'll pay for you, your wife, and your son, who was 2 years old at the time, to go to Dave Ledbetter for the whole year. And guess what happened? Just like in life happens, these obstacles. His wife died, and all bets were off. So all I can say, and I wasn't a pro golfer, but Tiger Woods and Ernie Els are very lucky. But like anything in life, it changes. It changed again. There I was, long-distance paddler, then golfer. And then in 1991, something special happened. Nelson Mandela was released from prison. And the whole sporting world changed for us. And I could eventually go to the Olympics. Again, big sacrifice. There's no money in winning gold medals unless your name is Tatiana Smith. I know where she is. So I went to train hard and actually captained the South African team to Barcelona. And you know what happened in Barcelona? Which happens to a lot of us. I came Norman nowhere. It wasn't a race, it was disgrace. But you know what? In adversity, there's opportunity. I learned from that. I learned from those losses and changed the way I trained. And that's what we all got to do. You got to learn. You got to take opportunities when there's failure. Then I went on, I'm very proud of, the Mgeni, I did the doozy with all these celebrities, because what my goal was there is to grow the doozy. So the first person I did was Nas Porta. So every guy from Pretoria started coming to paddle. That grew the sport. I remember it started at 200. Then I realized when I took Clive Barker that the people in the valley loved these heroes coming to their valley. By the time I was finished, I took Clive Barker, Dr. Kamala, Peggy Sue Kamala, all these guys down. We got 2,500 people in Mgeni River to do the doozy. But the one special person was baby Jake Matlatla. Do you know he weighs 46 kilograms? It takes me up to here. But a heart of gold. I've never seen a person swim so badly in my life. With two life jackets, he was nearly drowning. And you won't believe what happened. We take off down this big Ernie S. Pierce Weir and we fall out. You know me, I jump up, try and get some oxygen like most people want. And now I'm looking, where's baby Jake? Where's baby Jake? The boat's still upside down. I can't see him anywhere. I think he must have washed down the river. I turn the boat up. There he's sitting still, hat on, not a fear in life. And he did the whole race. But just to show you, in this sport, which is very expensive, this year, because of COVID and all those, not so many entries now, 250 entries, 80% come from the valley. Out of the top 10, 8 were black paddlers. So you can do it in anything, and you guys can do it. But that takes me on to what Alec was talking about. At the age of 49, I give up on being too old. At 49, I decide to go back to Molokai to try and win my 12th Molokai title. And understand and laugh. For all of you, you've got to change up. You've got to change things. If they're not working, you've got to change them. Remember, the guys I'm racing against can do 1,000 pull-ups. I can't even do one. I'm 49, to put in perspective. Roger Federer and Nadal are all giving up at 37. What's wrong with these guys? But I did things differently. In Durban, I wore a full wetsuit. I started a keto diet. I never used to eat. In a 3.5-hour race, I never used to eat and drink. These are all the things you have to do. And I went to do this race at 2012. And funny enough, in that Olympics where I came, Norman Nowhere, there was a guy called Clint Robinson who won the gold medal in 1992. And he had won 2 Molokais in a row. And now here I was, 49 years old, coming to race against this guy, Clint Robinson. He'd won 2 Molokais in a row and many gold medals and silver medals. This fat, overweight 49-year-old was taking him on. But I did things differently. Because you've got to think differently to achieve. And guess what? After 3 hours, 23 minutes, I beat this guy by 12 seconds. And when I crossed that line, I didn't do what Nadal and Federer do, throw my arms up. I was so tired, I can tell you right now, that if I'd fallen out of my canoe, I would have drowned. And that lesson taught me how powerful your brain can be for an old bullet like that to beat these young guys. It takes mental power. And from there, I get back to the cancer story and what they told me. When I got 6 months to live, they said, you better go to where you've got friends and family, just like the Biz News friends and family. You need people. And at my side, my wife, 38 years married, 43 years together, she's by my side. Because you need friends and family to give you that support to overcome anything. And let's talk about it. You've got to talk about it. So when I came back to Groote Hospital, they were going to take a biopsy of my tumor and said, just before I went to the hospital, the operating theater, they said, hey, we know what it is. It's multiple myeloma, bone marrow cancer, incurable disease. I said, so what? So when can I start paddling? But it was a long process. I had to have chemo every single day. And like most people, they keep it quiet. I never kept it quiet. I told everybody I got cancer. Because I know all you guys in this room want to help people. So they were helping me. First phone call I get is from a wife of a guy suffering from the same thing. He said, listen, Oscar, my husband got the same as you. The chemo is so bad that he had to stay in hospital. And you know what? While in hospital, he tripped over his drip and fell over and broke his back in 12 places. I said, what a diss. How can you trip over your drip? Only when I went in there, you have to walk around with a strip and you can do it. He's actually quite a nice oak. He helped me. But I learned, understand, because something common in this whole room is we're all getting older. But you know what? We can all get wiser. And to get wiser means that you educate yourself on everything. Keep teaching yourself, keep educating, and you will get better. You will find ways of doing things better. So when I started my chemo, I had my radiation. Then I started my chemo, and I used to fast for 3 days. Because, let me, it's very simple. If you've got no food in your stomach, how do you get sick? So 3 days, I used to have chemo every week for 2 or 3 hours. I never got sick. In fact, when I came out, I used to drink wine. I drank so much wine, I actually ran out. Because remember, in COVID, we couldn't steal the wine from everywhere. Remember, they wouldn't let us drink. I thought it'd give us COVID. Yeah, I remember that. But then I had they had to harvest my bone marrow because I had a bone marrow transplant. So they harvest my stem cell. And what that is you lie down here. They've got tubes in your both arms lying like that. And nobody told me it takes 6.5 hours to harvest it. 6.5 hours. And after about 3 hours, I need to go to the toilet. I said, what the hell do I do? I've got all these things connected to me. And that's the first time I had somebody help me go to the toilet. And boys, no happy ending, nothing. So once I'd done that, I got my stem cell. I came out of hospital. You know, I came out of hospital. I could walk 100 meters. It took me 24 hours to recover. But I carried on. I walked until I was walking 20 k's a day. Then all things were going. I never have been off chemo. One day I came back, I said, listen, I told my radiologist, I said, listen, my back's not feeling too good. I mean, you know, when I swing the plug, I've got a sore back. I said, it's old age. I said, okay, it's old age. I went to have an MRI. This is in 2023. And they found another tumor. How's my luck? Another tumor. And what do? So they put me on all the medicines. My multiple myeloma count, so a normal person's multiple myeloma count is 0. Stage 4 is 400, kappa light chains. Mine was 1,470, so I was even winning that race. I had the most cancer. I sound like Donald Trump. I've got the most cancer. But they gave me all the medicines, and people that know, and I'm sure there's lots, have had the red devil. I had the red devil every single day for 5 days and never affected me. And to this day, I'm on chemo every single day. It still doesn't affect me because of that positive mind, because of what I did in the past. So at 1,470, I had to make things different. And what I did, I fasted for 21 days. 21 days I fasted. And guess what happened? The cancer went from 1,470 to 111. While I was having that, I had the priest visit me to give me my last rites. That's 2023. I said, you're in the wrong room, my friend. I've got a lot more to give than going nowhere in no box. And then it came again. It came back again. And off I went to Portugal. Said, okay, maybe they found some treatment there. I got there, and guess what happens? I get to my doctor and he says, listen, you've had everything. There's nothing. I said, bug you, you better find something. And they found a trial out of America, Johnson & Johnson. The drug was going to cost $600,000 a month. And I got into the trial. The trial was supposed to be 8 years, supposed to be for. After five months, I collapsed, couldn't walk. I thought, what the hell's going on here? Can't be. Again, back into the hospital. And the worst thing, the guy said, in front of my brother and my wife, you got 1 day. I said, you're crazy. I've looked at my watch. It says I'm 100% fine, even though I was in hospital. Because my mind was not going to give up. And this time they sent a Portuguese priest. I couldn't understand him, so I didn't know what he said. But again, I fought it off. For those people that know, my platelets at 2. At 45, you could fly. So my first goal was just to get on the aeroplane because I didn't want to have a funeral in Portugal. And I made it. I went through there. I got back to South Africa. And now that drug that cost $600,000, I'm on a new drug now. It's the same drug. It would cost $600,000 in Portugal. It only cost $240,000 in South Africa. And thank goodness, Discovery's paying and my fund's helping me. So it's only costing me a couple of hundred. It's not too bad. But again, you have to have a positive mindset. Because with all this chemo, I have it all the time, every week. I just had mine 2 days ago. One of those lucky few people that once you get bone marrow cancer, I also had skin cancer. So they've cut my ear off. They put a hole in this head here. And I've just got another hole in my back of my head. And you know, it's funny thing is that I went just last week and got it cut out, this new cancer. And I walk into the skin specialist's room last week. And he said, Oscar, you won't believe this. You're one of the luckiest guy. We didn't get enough margin. You got to go for another operation next week. And that is next week. Next week, I play water polo. And the following week, I go for another operation. But remember, what I've done in the past has set me up for the future. Seize every day. Do your best every day. And remember, educate yourself. And I hope this inspires you to do better than you can actually do. Thank you very much.
There we go.
Thanks, Oscar. It was, well, what a story. And it's a story that you've articulated in quite a lot of detail. But one of the things that astonishes me is there are 848 people on your WhatsApp group. That's a lot of people. And a lot of people who express great friendship, great affection for you. So you've got something in your life that enables you to accumulate friends like most people accumulate clothes or shoes or how? What's your secret there?
I think it started when I was a young boy. Firstly, I was a friendly kind of guy. I never bear grudges. I never worry. And understand, people tend to commemorate around positive people. But you know what taught me the biggest lesson? I was one of the biggest salesmen of PPS, which is Professional Provident Society. And what I did there was no commission in this insurance product when I sold it. And I think that's what life's all about, is about doing the best for the people that you know. Don't do it for yourself. Do it for them, and they will help you in the future. And those friends that I did their PPS, some of them, Peter Armitage, you probably know, Andy Leith, a lot of the captains of industry. Because if you give, you always get back. And I think that's the most important thing. Just keep on giving. My wife says, and I get every single day, which is a terrible thing. I get people coming to me and say, listen, I've got cancer. Send my friend a video. And I do that every day. Every day I have a person who's got cancer enough to send them a voice note or a video, I normally do. And it's terrible to see. But I mean, that's what you've got to do in life. You've got to help other people. They'll help you. So that fund in 2 weeks raised 2 million rand. So it was unbelievable. And I'm humbled by it. But again, life's about giving and you'll get back.
You know, there's an ex neighbor of ours here in Hermanus who lived just up there in Fulklip. And he decided to walk 20 minutes and blow his brains out just down on the beach here. And he used to call many people, my friend. I was my friend. Where do you draw the line between my friend and perhaps someone who's an acquaintance?
I think, yeah, there's a difficult one. I mean, in my cell phone, I've got 8,500 friends. 8,500. And understand that to have friends for life, you've got to make an effort. It's not about this patting on the back. When somebody's in need, you've got to help them. And the same thing is when I'm in Denmark, anywhere in the world, I'll go and make an effort to go and see them. And it becomes hard. You can imagine 8,500 people wanting a bit of you. But you've got to make the effort. It's not easy, but you've got to make it. And you've got to make it happen. And I think that's the difference, is make your relationships real. And I think that's what I'm hoping. That's what the people realize about me.
authenticity. Neil De Beer will be talking a little later. He's explained he also has cancer. What would your advice be to Neil?
Very good question, because let me tell you, cancer is difficult at the best of times, but when you start reading, and again, why I say educate yourself, when I fasted for 21 days, cancer loves food, and especially carbohydrates. But nobody's going to tell you to stop eating, because you know what? When you fast for 21 days, let me tell you, nobody makes money at the restaurants, nobody makes money at the pills, and nobody makes money out of toilet paper. So I would do that anytime. I follow a guy, Professor Thomas Seyfried, and he's a biologist who's been studying all these things. But I understand nobody will give you money if you're going to say to a person who's suffering from cancer, start fasting, start exercising, and eat properly. And I'd do that all day. All day I'd say fast is the most important thing. And funny enough, it's been around for so many years. A 7-day fast actually starts breaking down visceral fat and starts breaking cancer cells in your body.
Sounds a little like what Tim Noakes went along his adventure, where he started off with carbohydrates, thinking that you had to carbo load. And now, of course, we know that Tim's been vilified by many people because he's taken a different route. Is that where yours came from personal kind of experience?
That's a great story. Funny enough, this is 15 years ago. One of my friends in America, the same guy that told me I had 6 months to live, he's still around as well. He said to me, Oscar, the new way of eating is to eat fat and don't eat carbs. And I told this to Tim. Tim said, no, you're talking shit. I said, what? I said, no, I don't believe this. And then the penny dropped. And within 6 months, he changed exactly what I told him. So I've actually got that letter where I told him, hey, this is the new way. And that is the new way, and I think that is the only way. And Tim started from that day. In fact, Tim's done a lot of research. In 1980, he did a research on me doing the Port Elizabeth East London race, 240 kilometers. And the last day is 56 kilometers. It took me 4 hours or 5 hours with no water. And he said, you've got to be dehydrated. I said, no, I wasn't dehydrated. And that's why he wrote a book called Waterlogged, because too many people drink too much water.
What do you think of Tim, and particularly the high level of criticism he gets?
I think it's a shame. You know, yes, you can all have your different views. I mean, that's fine. But you know what happened to Tim? There's another guy called Gary Fetke in Australia. He said, I won't put a new knee into you until you lose the weight, because I'm wasting my time. Go on a keto diet. He was also taken to the Australian Medical Council. He won his case like Tim did. The difference is all the people that said he was wrong went to him and said, you're right, we apologize. To this day, when I speak to Tim and he comes to visit me in the hospital, which I'm always in, he still hasn't had an apology from one of those people. And he won his case twice in the Supreme Court, and nobody's come and said, I'm sorry, we made a mistake. And the first time I went into 2019 into the hospital for 3 weeks, they wouldn't let me fast. And I used to fast, and they were giving me carbohydrates. I said, don't want this. Now, 6 years later, when I was in the hospital for 3 weeks, I fast for 21 days. Nobody complained. So there is a shift, but it's not fast enough.
There are a number of comments here. Very inspiring. Thanks, Oscar, for your wonderful story. Jenny J asks you, how important was the fasting in fighting your cancer? And do you still fast?
100%. I wouldn't be here if I didn't fast. That's the doctors. The doctors told me, my wife, bring the family home. He's not going to last. I said, you're kidding me. And that's why I did the fast. And I still fast. Basically, I eat whenever I get invited out. So don't invite me out too often, you know. So I'll fast for a week, 2 days. I only eat, normally only eat one meal a day. Only one meal a day. That's my norm. And if I'm not getting invited out, then I'll go 2 or 3 or 4 days, no problem. I was in hospital on the 30th of December, now having my new treatment, and I fasted there for 6 or 7 days. It's very easy once you're in a state of ketosis. It's actually easy. You don't have to eat at all. Your body, and to give you perspective, the longest fast in the world, who can guess what the longest fast in the world was? How many days? Huh? Oh, God, 382 days. Go and look it up. 382 days. He was 100 kilos overweight, so he lost a bit of weight, you can imagine. And then the athletes that are winning the marathon, they got 12% body fat. At 12% body fat, you can fast for 6.5 weeks. So, and I've had so many people on their deathbed just lately, and the doctors have given up on them. And I said, listen, you've got nothing to lose. Just go and fast. Enjoy your life. Don't take any pee. Just go and fast. And I assure you, I know it kills cancer because I've done it and I do it all the time.
Brilliant speech, says Tebogo. A question to Oscar. Entrepreneurs and professionals struggle with resilience. What advice do you have for staying motivated while facing setbacks?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I've had so many setbacks. Yeah, so the most important thing is you've got to keep a strong mind. If you keep a strong mind, the people around you keep a strong mind, and that's the most important thing in life, is to surround yourself with positive people. I mean, people ask me, you get obstacle after obstacle coming at you, what do you do? Surely there must be times where you're feeling down. I said, never. Because you can't let it happen to you, not for one second. And understand what you can do for yourself is to go and read, go and watch, and go and learn from other people. I don't think there was a doctor born out of the womb. I don't think there was an Oscar. You make it yourself. You train yourself to become positive. And I think that's important. You can do anything in your life that you want to, but you've got to learn about it. You've got to educate yourself and learn from other people. And I think I was fortunate. I mean, I started at 14 when I wanted to win. And winning is a lot better than coming second. And I never stopped, you know. So even at 58, I was having in the middle of chemo session. At 58, I had a race in Brazil. I had my chemo. In those days, it was taking me 3 or 4 hours. And in Portugal, one day, jumped on a plane, flew to Brazil for a race. I was 58. Remember, 58 now. And there were 120-kilometer race, 4 days. And off I went. Again, you have to make sacrifice. You have to train hard. I went as hard as I could. First day I came third. Second day I came second. At the end of 4 days, I won by 5 minutes. And the next guy was 28. I was 58 and he was 28. And that's because I got a tougher mental capacity than the rest. And you got to do things different to the rest.
You talk about learning from other people. Give us an idea of the books that you read.
Funny enough, Steve Jobs, I read his book twice. I mean, Outliers, all the books, all autobiographies, I like reading those the most. I don't even waste my time on fiction. Not at all. I won't even watch a movie that's fiction. I only watch things that I think I can learn from. So I spend my life learning all the time. At the moment, I read Rory Steyn's book, and I've just finished CEO of Diary of a CEO, Stephen Bond. I just finished that. Interesting that most of the things that I talk about in my book, he talks about a lot of that, but he's just more famous and richer than me. So I'm always looking at autobiographies. I'm always trying to learn from people, whether it's on YouTube or anything. That's my thing. I just don't like anything fiction. I'm there to learn no matter how old I am. So when I first got this cancer, they said, no, fasting won't work for you. Then I said, no, let me go and check from the facts. And I went to go and see Professor Thomas Seyfried at Boston College. He told me it does work and I use it. So that's what you do. You've got to make effort to find out because it is difficult out there. There are so many people saying fasting's bad. People say fasting's good. There are so many different versions out there. It's tough to know what is correct. But if you educate yourself enough, you'll know who's telling the correct truth. And I am living proof.
Alec Harriwell says, you speak of the mind and body. How do you feel about the soul? How does that fit into the equation?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate everybody, their prayers and everything like that. When I was a young boy and I lost my mother to cancer at age 42, and my mother was one of those people that did everything for everybody. She was a saint. And when I lost her, I didn't lose my soul, but I lost my faith. I'm not very religious, but I appreciate all the people sending their prayers and things. And I think, okay, maybe time will come. But I mean, at the moment, I'm one of those people that appreciate it, but I'm not very religious.
So you don't You don't really spend time thinking about your soul.
I spend my time finding the next wave and finding the next cure and helping other people, which I think is more important.
And hitting the next drive 250 meters.
No, I can hardly drive out of my shadow at the moment, but I can still score well. You know, Morne and I beat the other two guys, David and Gus, yesterday at Arabella. So I had a good round. I'm playing off 50 and I shot 81, so I'm happy with that.
That's thievery.
No, it's not.
Where do you stand on alcohol? Justin Fenn wants to know.
Okay, alcohol is very bad for you, but that's the only vice I have. What I do is, on a keto diet, you're allowed 100 grams of carbs. And what I do is all my carbs in the form of dry French champagne, preferably Dom Perignon, if you guys want to get on Dom Perignon, or dry white or dry red wines. And I normally stick to that. And the odd occasion, I'll have a beer. But as I say, beer's got a lot more carbs. So I drink wine and champagne most of the time. So, but it's actually bad for you. So when I go on a fast, it's water only. No alcohol, no nothing. Black tea, black coffee, and that's it. And once you go over 1.5 weeks, then you go into bone broth. That helps your micronutrients, your potassium and all those things.
Just repeat that, the after 1.5 weeks?
You go into bone broth. So what happens is that when you don't need macronutrients, fat, carbs, and protein, you need micronutrients, which is your potassium, your zinc, and all those things in bone broth. So that's what you need after 1.5 weeks. But sometimes you can go longer than that without that because you've got so much reserves in your body.
I've heard a lot about bone broth at home as well. So interesting that it's something that's worked really for you. Bonet wants to know, how do you celebrate life and appreciate the beauty in everyday moments, especially after facing your life-threatening illness?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, the first thing is I get out the champagne every day. Every time I have a meal, I celebrate life because let me tell you, I didn't think I'd even make this last year's or this year's Biz News conference. I never even know what's happening around the corner. And the funny thing is you see me standing here very happy, got a hole in my head, so I'm not allowed to train. But normally I train 3 or 4 hours a day, but I'm not allowed to do anything at the moment. But you never know. My cancer is worse than Grant Kenny and Clint Robinson put together. They want to beat me. That cancer wants to beat me like you cannot believe. So I'm just hoping this drug that I'm on now will last longer than 6 months. So I'm on 3 months. So if it lasts 6 months or 7 months, I'm hoping it lasts 1.5 years. Because then I've got one more drug, and then I have to have a thing called CAR-T. CAR-T is when they re-engineer your DNA, and that's going to cost me $16 million is the cheapest quote I've got so far. And at the moment, it doesn't give you extended life. It helps leukemia patients, but doesn't help multiple myeloma patients. So again, I live every single life. If somebody asks me, I'll do it. I do everything for the now and enjoy life. You know, somebody invites me, I want to go out there. I don't say no to many things.
Have you been following the developments, for instance, in AI? I was at an event with the guy who started DeepMind, and he was explaining how the whole Google investments that they've made there is transforming medical in ways that we couldn't even imagine because of the way that AI is doing it. Have you been following that? Have you got any insights?
Yeah, I've been following it a lot because the only way I can live long is if AI comes up with new genetic models to fight my multiple myeloma. And it is going so fast. The only downside of that is that I don't know how many drug companies want to find a cure for cancer. I mean, understand, my cancer was costing $600,000 a month. So why would you find a cure? And that's my biggest worry. Nobody tells you to fast. Nobody. They won't tell you because you can't make money out of it. So that's the only downside. But if I keep on pushing, that's why when I wrote the book, the most important thing about the book was to help other people overcome adversity in my book. And the other thing is to donate money to Campaigning for Cancer, NGO, to help other people because I'm raising money for Campaigning for Cancer, and I want to raise $250 million, but it'll stay on the balance sheet so that we can put more people and give more people drugs, because Mark cancer is so expensive. You haven't got the money, you die within a year.
It's an interesting point, and you've raised it a few times now, that there's no money to be made out of fasting. How much of the industry is actually a money-making scam?
It's a hard one to put a... You never know. I mean, I think everybody's... I always see good in everybody. So you don't think they're scammy. The problem is you have to stay with the norm. You can't move out. You can't do something different because they say, oh, you did this and that's why you died. I mean, pancreatic cancer, there's not many people who survive it. But I've got two mates that are surviving it, doing the fasting, doing that, having the Whipple and all that. So it's a tough one. I think every doctor is there to help you, but they're not trained in it. I mean, I can tell you that a doctor after 7 years has 2 or 3 months on nutrition. Meantime, nutrition is the most important thing. There should be the other way around to help people, you know. So it's a tough one. I think everybody out there wants to help. They just don't know how, by breaking out of the norm, you know.
Yeah, it sounds to me like what you said right at the outset, that you need to take responsibility is probably the number one priority.
Yeah, you've got to decide and understand that thing called gut feel. It's up to you. It's up to you. That gut feel, what's going to work for you. You can't rely on too many other people. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to you. And then you've got to surround yourself with smart people, and you've got to educate yourself so that you can make the right decision. And again, some of the decisions are tough, like doing a 21-day fast. It's not easy, but if it's life and death, I'm sure you'll do it. And that's the strangest thing. I mean, when I was sitting in that hospital room and I was on morphine, I had to sleep exactly like this. This is how I slept, and I slept well every day. And every morning I'd wake up, I think, Al, I'm still here. What happened? This doctor's talking shit again. You know, I was on the morphine, maybe I was dreaming. And when I came off the morphine, I mean, lots of people said, once you're on morphine, you're gonna. But I didn't believe that. All I used the morphine is to deaden the pain. And then once, slowly, I weaned myself off, and off I went again. And one thing I did, I used to get up. I could hardly stand, and I used to walk 4 or 5 kilometers, weaving around. But I kept myself moving, because while you're moving, you're not dead. And I've always done that since I was a young boy. And I recommend that to everybody.
What's your daily routine?
Now it's a bit curtailed. I've got 28 staples, and it looks like a guy was doing a fence in my head, yeah? Very shit with his wiring job, his staples. But normally I would wake up early and do a session. I'll swim, and then I'll do all my exercise in the sauna. So I do push-ups, sit-ups, dips. I do everything simply. Then I'd walk, then I'd paddle, and then I'd play golf, and I'd try and walk all those things. So I try and do 2 or 3 or 4 hours a day, and then obviously work. I've got a lot of work, and I fly around the world giving motivational talks, and I also have very involved in New Mobile now, which we started with the people that started Citadel.
Patrick Duggan has posted a question here. He says, what do you think of Brian Johnson, the man who wants to live forever, Don't Die documentary on Netflix? Looks like he's actually missing out on life by trying to extend it with his rigorous protocol.
That's a good one. You know, they all say, listen, the alcohol's bad for you, must never have it. But understand this, don't let cancer rule your life, and don't let trying to live forever also rule your life, because what a dull and boring life the guy has. He doesn't go have a glass of champagne, he never falls over drunk, you know, so I mean, what a life. I do all of those things, and I end up in hospital doing the things that I shouldn't be doing. My wife carried me home many times, and you see the size of my wife, I don't know how she does it. But she normally has friends around. But I mean, again, you've got to live life as well. Don't let cancer rule you. Yes, you make these decisions and you go on a fast, but then you come back out. When I finished the fast, I celebrate. I walked, lost 25 kilos. I walked and had a dinner at Ilioni's. I could hardly walk, but I celebrated life, because there I was celebrating life. I enjoyed my champagne. I did it. You see, I think that's important. Once you let cancer rule your life, you end up going in a downward spiral. So I will have an odd glass of champagne, or an odd bottle, should I say.
And how do you stop getting distracted? All of us have got daily challenges. People who bug us, taxis who cut us off, not here in Hermanus, but certainly most parts of the country. How do you stay away from that.
Yeah, I think that's something you have to train your brain. You know, when the taxi cuts you off, there's nothing you actually can do, you know. So I don't know how many people worry in this room. Yeah, probably nobody worries, you know. They just go through life with no worries. But I've been... How many people worry? Raise a hand. People worry about what's happening? Yeah, a few people worry. Okay. So I've got the best pill for worrying, and this is what I do all the time. Not that there shouldn't be a word worry in the English language. That's number one. But number two, when you worry the next time, I'm going to tell you what you do. You go to the toilet, you lock the door, right? Make sure it's locked. You sit there and you worry like hell and see if anything changes. Nothing changes, I can tell you, unless you do something about it. That's what I do. So I never have problems. The taxi cuts you off. You can curse and swear, which I sometimes do, but it's not going to help anybody. He can't even hear you. So you've got to think about that all the time, because that's what happens. We get distracted by stupid things, you know. Just think of the positive about everything. It's like my two kids. I've got a daughter and a son. My daughter's 31, my son's 34, and they're poles apart, which is the strangest thing. One's super positive, one's super negative. And when I hear things from my son, like he's one of the second officers on those super yachts, he said, "Oh, I'm doing it tough here, you know, I'm sitting in the Caribbean." I said, "Just stand up there and have a look out and see what you see. Beautiful ocean, everything. Think of the good things. So what? You're working 80 hours a day. You've always got to find the positive parts of every bad situation, because there always is."
I think there's a lot to be said for that. David Melville wants to know, do you take any supplements?
I've asked my wife. I take about 15 pills. I don't know what they are, but I just take them. You know, when your wife tells you to have them, you just have them. But yes, I'm on some alternative cancer medicines: fenbendazole, ivermectin, methylene blue. Those are the ones I know.
Ivermectin?
Yeah, ivermectin. Yeah, I take it once a week. Yeah. So I take that once a week, 5 milligrams. So again, so it's called the Joe Tippins protocol. So I take... To get my hemoglobin and my platelets up, I take folates. I think I take folates. I don't know what, but I take about 15 pills. I hate pills, but I can swallow the whole lot, all 15. If my wife tells me to do it, I just do it. Okay, so I don't know what they are. You have to ask her. But you have to sometimes, you know, vitamin D is very important. So I always sit in the sun early morning and late at night. Sun, I think, is one of the best cures. And whatever my wife gives me, that's what I take.
Do you take them when you're fasting as well?
Yes, you do. I actually do take pills when I'm fasting. That's the only thing I take, with water. I don't know what they are, but I just take them.
Oscar, we're coming close to breaking now for tea, but I'd love to get your insight on something that affects all of us here. I remember at the worst of the woke time, there was this thing called microaggressions. If somebody looks at you wrong, then, hey, you know, I'll go and report that person. And I remember reading somewhere that the time to really get offended is when a Russian tank drives through your village and you live in Ukraine. What you're going through now, and when you see all the drama and all the attention that we pay to the stuff that is very hard for Helen can change it, but the rest of us, very hard for us to change. How do you view that? How do you look at when there's all this discussion about politics and so on?
Yeah, I mean, in the day, you've got to just do what you have to do, you know. In the end of it, you have to do what helps you, you know. So, and again, for me, South African politics, if you live in South Africa, you know, you've got to be in a gated community. You've got to look after your own water, your own lights and things like that. You just do it. You know, I think there's always a way of finding the solution every time. There's no such thing as I put my head in the sand and I don't do anything about it. You've got to do something about it. You've got to do it now. And I think people have got to stand up and realize South Africa is a great place. It's still a great place to live. I lived in Portugal for 9 years. Also not bad. They have water and lights. And police, they have everything there, not bad. But they haven't got your friends and your family. And that's what you need around you all the time. And that's what's going to get you over the line. I mean, and we talk about your friend down the road. I've had many people read my book and stop thinking that life's so tough. Just think about what I've gone through, and life's not so tough. So suck it up and read my book, and it'll tell you, hey, this is what you do. Because obviously I go through tough times. Everybody does. There's not a person in this room that doesn't go through tough times, but that's how you handle the tough times, how you work through it, how you come out the other end more positive and learning more. I think that's the most important thing.
Oskar Chalupski, thank you.
Thank you, Alex.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here. And get to shop more here. And do more here. And enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Downings is South Africa's leading marquee infrastructure company, proudly celebrating 25 years of excellence, renowned for creativity, innovation, and unmatched technical expertise. Our event marquees and semi-permanent structures elevate any project with style and sophistication. Whether it's a corporate event or a commercial project, we tailor every structure to meet your needs with world-class precision. Visit downings.co.za to consult with our expert team. Downings, your trusted marquee specialists nationwide.